to start a full-out war in the region, you know, millions being killed and basically so much infrastructure being destroyed. But what basically what the entire resistance front has done is a war of attrition, that they responded to every Israeli invasion. They responded to every Israeli assassination. They constantly responded, showing the Zionist regime that they have a deterrence power, that it will cost them something to kill innocent people, to assassinate leaders. And so this is, I mean, this has been, the latest phase of this genocide has been going on for over a year now. And Iranians have supported Palestinians in so many different ways. Iran has sent food supplies, medical supplies. Iranian women have been selling their gold, millions and, worth of gold, to help support the resistance front. Iranians are supporting the resistance front in every way they can. But what they have not started is an all-out war in the region, which it seems like the Zionist regime, that was their goal. Even though the U.S. regime, that is actually the regime that is making all this possible, even though the U.S. regime cannot engage any other wars at the time, I mean, they cannot. They have recently announced that they cannot continue to supply Ukraine and the Zionist regime at the same time with interceptor missiles. So, I mean, so with all of their support, with everything they could do, they don't have the power to start a full-out war with countries like Iran, with an independent military that they cannot shut down, with a strong air defense system. And they have seen Iran's missiles. And of course, the missiles Iran used in the second True Promise operation, they were not even all, a lot of those missiles were also used before. So Iran showed that it can cause a lot of damage without using its latest technology. But they talked about surprises also, such as the laser air defense systems that they might have used today. So basically, what Iran continued to do was a war of attrition and responding retaliatory attacks to the Zionist targeting of resistance leaders and Iranian points of interest. And also, now that Iran has retaliated different times, now they understand that all the U.S. interests can be basically, all the U.S. bases, can be legitimate target for Iran in the region should the Israeli regime make any stupid mistakes with the support of the U.S. regime.
Thank you, Miriam, for your reporting and joining us on this early morning edition of our rolling coverage to address the so-called Israeli attack. Joining us now is Adi Risk, writer and political analyst, joining us out of the Lebanese capital, Beirut. Hello, Adi. Good morning. Hope you're safe and doing well out there in Beirut. Your initial thoughts on the so-called Israeli attack that just took place in the early morning hours here in Iran?
Well, this reminds me a bit of the Israeli response, which took place in April. If you remember, then they sent some quadcopters, apparently, to Isfahan. That was a minimal response. And from the looks of it right now, it seems that now it's also a minimal Israeli operation. So I think that the Israelis basically have been forced to make do with limited action, the same as what happened in April. And I think that there are two reasons behind it, and they are both linked. The first reason is Iran's significant military capabilities, which I think were very clearly shown in previous operations, whether it be in April or the last one, which took place earlier this month. And I think that, second of all, the American stance, I think that the Americans realize that a really big escalation, a big Israeli military operation against Iran, will likely ignite a regional war with very damaging repercussions for the whole world in general. So I think from there, the Americans objected to any escalated Israeli military action. That's what happened in April. It appears that the same thing has happened now. If you recall the leaks which took place from the Pentagon, apparently, to an Iranian website, Middle East Spectator, whereby supposedly Israeli military plans were revealed in detail to the Iranian side. I personally think that indeed there was a leak from the Pentagon, because the Pentagon has been very adamant against an Israeli escalation towards Iran. So the Americans, I think, they sent a clear message to the Israelis not to go beyond certain limits in their response, and hence Israel was forced to make do with this operation, which we saw late last night.
And it really seems that right now we're just seeing one escalation after another. Ali, to what extent do you think the West is going to... I mean, is the West willing to be dragged into... Should Iran now respond with a heavy-handed response to this this latest attack by the Israelis? I mean, to what extent and what countries do you think are willing to line up behind Israel should there be regional conflict? And if it doesn't blow up to that, or it doesn't go to, you know, that far, tensions, are there mechanisms that are trying to calm down the leadership in Tel Aviv and try to prevent regional escalation by the regime? Because it doesn't seem we're seeing that.
Well, as I was saying before, I think that the leaks from the Pentagon, they give a clear answer as to where Washington stands when it comes to an all-out war or escalation against Iran. Clearly, the U.S. doesn't want it. In particular, the Pentagon doesn't want this to happen. What we're seeing is that, yes, the Israelis do want to drag others into a conflict. I think that what we have to focus on now is what Iran is going to do. Is Iran going to say that this was a very minimal operation, not worthy of a response, or is Iran going to retaliate? If you recall what happened in April, when the Israelis alleged that it carried out an operation in Isfahan, that was a very minimal kind of operation. Some people wouldn't even call it an operation. And Iran didn't find itself obliged to respond in any way. Will the same thing happen now? Or will it be different this time? I think keep an eye on. I think that it's possible that Iran, you know, might make do, not escalate, given that this appears to have been a very limited action taken by the Israeli side. And as I said, the Israelis had to make do with this. Now, regarding what you asked about a mechanism being put in place in order to calm the Israeli leadership or control the Israeli leadership, I think that the Biden administration, it's allowed itself to become hostage to Benjamin Netanyahu's policies, to his government, but to a certain extent. When it comes to Lebanon, when it comes to Gaza, they've basically given a free rein to Netanyahu. But as we can see, when it comes to Iran, it appears that the situation is quite different. I think given the dangers involved, that there's a red line the Americans have drawn when it comes to Iran. And this is that's forced the Israelis to make do, as I said, with the retaliations or with the operations they have carried out. Let's wait and see, again, how Iran is going to respond. Should Iran respond, and should it escalate, I think that in that case, the West might find that it has no choice but to enter the fray, to become part of the conflict. That would be the nightmare scenario. But I think it's more likely that the escalation between Israel and Iran is going to stop here for various reasons, and so it will be relatively contained, the situation.
And when we gauge the achievements of the regime over the last 13 months, how do you perceive, what kind of victory, if any, has the regime achieved in Gaza, in Lebanon, since September, not over the last year with those cross-border skirmishes, but since September, and now with this attack on Iran, and also with this media campaign, as far as its image, is it flailing or is it achieving anything noteworthy? And even the respect of its closest allies, Ali, can you give us an overall assessment where the regime stands today in both militarily and politically in the world arena as opposed to October 6th last year?
Look, tactically speaking, Israel's achieved quite a lot. I think we have to admit that. It's assassinated senior figures in Hezbollah, in Hamas, it's done a lot of, so a lot of symbolic achievements, a lot of tactical achievements have been made. But strategically, which is more important, I think on the contrary, it's in a very difficult strategic situation. And this is something which even Israel's allies have warned of. Early on in the conflict on Gaza, the American Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, he warned that Israel is making tactical gains, but at the same time, it is risking strategically. He was referring specifically to the military action taking place against Gaza. And I think that strategically speaking as well, what the events have proven, the events ever since last October 7 until now, is that the Israelis can't rely on themselves and can't take charge in the region without the Americans being involved. I think that the American plan, which started off, by the way, during the Obama administration, was to have Israel integrated in the region militarily and also politically. We saw the Abraham Accords, the normalization, under the assumption that this normalization, this integration, would allow the U.S. to disengage from the region and to focus on its priorities, China, the Asia-Pacific, etc. October 7 came, and Israel showed that it was vulnerable even to a resistance movement with relatively limited capabilities, meaning Hamas. And Israel waged war against Hamas without achieving its goals. It needed the Americans to take part. And I think, by the way, that the assassination of Sinwar in particular, contrary to what is being said, I think the Americans were very much involved in that, the assassination of Sinwar. So Israel's proven itself, I think, to be a strategic liability for the U.S. It's prevented the U.S. from focusing on its more important goals, from its priorities, Asia-Pacific, China. It's being forced the U.S. to come back to the region all because of Israel. And I don't think that bodes very well for the Israelis, strategically speaking.
And moving forward now, how do you see things? We know that Iran has been very calculated in its response, and we even heard Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah before his martyrdom allude to the fact that Hezbollah or any other resistance, for that matter, in the region does not have any delusions about how sophisticated and lethal the arsenal that stands behind Israel and that of Washington is, and that when confronting the regime, all that has been taken and continues to be taken into account. With that being said, how do you see things moving forward? Do you see Iran giving an assertive response to this, or do you see another chapter of strategic patience?
I think that in the immediate future, I think that Iran won't respond. I'm just speculating here. I don't have any information, but that's the way I see things. That's my own judgment. If we look at Iran's past behavior, again, I'll give you the example of what happened in April. The Israelis supposedly attacked Iran back then with the quadcopters in Isfahan. That was basically a non-response. It was something many people even ridiculed it, including Ben Gavir, the Israeli National Security Minister. And this operation, which took place last night, it was somewhat heavier than the Isfahan operation, but nevertheless, it was still something minimal. It was still something symbolic. And so judging from how Iran approaches things, I don't think that there will be any response, at least in the near future. So that's how the way I see things heading. That doesn't mean that the escalation isn't going to continue on other fronts, however. Gaza, Lebanon, they're still continuing. And that I think that in Lebanon in particular, the Biden administration has some goals it wants to achieve. It's been very open about that. It said we want to use this in order to weaken Hezbollah and in order to overcome Hezbollah's veto to elect a new president. So it's investing politically to change the political dynamics in Lebanon, for example. So when it comes to Iran, the Iranian-Israeli exchanges, I think they are going to stop for the time being. But I think from now, at least until just before the American elections, this escalation on Lebanon and Gaza is going to continue.
And in an overall sense, I mean, what kind of impact, what they call this cabinet right now in Tel Aviv as the farthest right, Ali, I'm sure you've heard the reference in the regime's history. And, I mean, what we've seen in the last 13 months in the region from this cabinet, has it been an exception, or is this just standard Zionist protocol? And what I mean is, what kind of impact has this cabinet had on Israel's policies and actions? I mean, the aggression we've seen in Gaza, the escalation into Lebanon, would we have seen that from any other cabinet, or is this an exceptional cabinet here?
Look, there's no doubt that you have some very, very extreme faces in this cabinet, unprecedented compared to previous cabinets, that's true, at least when it comes to their openness about it. Ben Gavir, for example, he was even designated a terrorist in the United States, if I'm not mistaken. But I think what's more important is that it was during the time of this cabinet that Israel was subject to this very devastating blow. What I mean by that is the October 7 Al-Aqsa storm operation. And I think it's quite likely that whatever be the makeup of the Israeli cabinet, any cabinet which would have been in power and suffered a blow like that one, the Al-Aqsa storm, would probably have reacted in the same way, regardless of who the people are, who the figures are in it. It's true that the rhetoric maybe is quite extreme. What's happening in the West Bank, for example, I think is very unique, maybe unprecedented. But when it comes to the overall Israeli retaliation to Al-Aqsa storm, I think you would have seen that from any cabinet, because this was seen as a major blow, was something which shook Israel's sense of deterrence. So you probably would have seen the same behavior regardless of who was in power.
Right, and then do you also see, I mean, we've seen the whole world, including the UN, we saw it mentioned in BRICS in Kazan over the last few days. Do you see this leadership in Tel Aviv accepting a Lebanon and Gaza ceasefire anytime soon, Ali, and why not?
I think that the only way they're going to accept a ceasefire in Gaza is, or ceasefire in Gaza and Lebanon, is number one, if they're subject to some really heavy blows. They are being subject to heavy blows, but they're still not ready to give in, the Israeli side. That's number one. Number two, and I think this is the more important issue, the Americans, the only one or the only party that can really stop what the Israelis are doing are the Americans. And the Americans don't seem to be prepared to do that. In fact, at certain times, it seems that they're encouraging the Israelis, although they speak about wanting to end the war, the necessity of putting an end to the civilian suffering, etc. But they do see in this an opportunity as well, especially in Lebanon, as I said in the previous answer. They have this goal, which they've been working on for a very long time, to weaken Hezbollah. And they see that now is a golden opportunity to do that, given the assassination of Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, Sayyid Hashim Safiyuddin, given the very strong blows which were inflicted on Hezbollah. By the way, this doesn't mean that Hezbollah's military capabilities have been severely downgraded, as we can see with more and more Israeli soldiers being killed. But as the Americans see it, this is a golden opportunity to achieve that goal of weakening Hezbollah. So I don't see the Americans putting some real pressure on the Israeli side, at least for the time being, in order to put an end to this situation.
And when you speak of the Americans, Ali, we've seen Joe Biden's rhetoric. Kamala Harris has made comments, especially recently, saying Palestinians deserve their own state. They deserve self-determination. They deserve dignity. We've heard Donald Trump's statement. Depending on who assumes office in a few weeks' time, how do you see that impacting Lebanon, Palestinians, and the greater region?
I think that, by the way, when Harris and Joe Biden make these remarks, this is for election purposes more than anything else. According to some polls I've seen, Harris actually trails Trump amongst Arab American voters, which is something very interesting. You would have thought that Arab American voters would lean towards the Democrats, but this doesn't seem to be the case, and this is not good news for the Democrats at all, because we have a very, very close contest coming up between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump. I think that should Kamala Harris come to power, we're going to see more tension between the Israelis and the Americans, or should I say between the Democrats and the Likud party, the party which is in power. Should Donald Trump come to power, and this is something here which I have a different opinion about than many, I don't necessarily see it the case that Donald Trump is going to be 100% behind Netanyahu in waging war and escalating in this region. In fact, if you read a recent report by the Times of Israel, it said that Trump has been focusing on the necessity to end the war. So the issue of ending the war, even for the Republicans, it seems that they can only put up with so much. So yes, for the time being, again, they're going to continue in the immediate future to support Netanyahu, but this can only continue for so long. So whoever may be, I think, the person in power or the party in power in the next elections or after the elections.
This is Tehran, the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Well, what you've just heard was our live coverage of events in Iran. Israel, the Israeli regime, has targeted various positions, it claims, in Tehran, also in the southern Iranian provinces of Khuzestan and Ilam in the early hours of Saturday morning, 26th of October. As you've heard from our live coverage, it's very much business as usual throughout the Islamic Republic of Iran. Iranian officials are saying there has been minimal damage in this attack and that no IRGC military bases in Tehran, the Iranian capital, has been targeted by the Israeli regime. Also, Iran is saying that Iran's Tasnim news agency has said that Israel's claim of targeting 20 positions in Iran is very unreal and it's really part of psychological warfare. Iran's Air Defense Force has confirmed Israeli attacks targeting positions in Tehran, Khuzestan and Ilam provinces. And Iran is saying that Iran's integrated air defense system has successfully intercepted and repelled this act of aggression by the Israeli regime. And there has been very much limited damage to some locations in Iran. And the dimensions of this incident are currently being investigated, according to Iranian officials. So pretty much business as usual in Iran, very little damage. We go back to our normal programming. Stay with us.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Defense of Iranian combatants.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
The war in West Asia has entered a new phase. Israel has shifted its focus from Hamas to Hezbollah, moving the conflict from Gaza to southern Lebanon. The explosion of thousands of Hezbollah members' pagers led to a high number of casualties among Hezbollah forces. At the same time, Israel has prioritized the assassination of senior commanders of this group and has officially begun the war with heavy attacks on Hezbollah positions in Lebanon. On September 27th, the regime assassinated Hassan Nasrallah, the long-standing leader of Hezbollah, a major escalation in its war with the Lebanese resistance group and the resistance axis as a whole. This outrageous move has now brought the region one step closer to a much wider conflict, as it has triggered Iran to show a military response. The Islamic Republic of Iran, as the strategic ally of Hezbollah against the brutal adventurism of Israel in the region, was finally forced to carry out a military operation against the regime. On October 1st, the Islamic Revolution Guard Corps launched hundreds of missiles towards the heart of Israel in response to what Tehran asserted the regime's assassination of Hamas's chief Ismail Haniyeh in Tehran, Hezbollah's leader Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, and IRGC commander Abbas Nilfurushan. Dubbed Operation True Promise 2, it was carried out with more than 90% success and was fully compliant with international laws. Meant to deter Israel from further escalation, this countermeasure was taken based on the United Nations Charter, as Iran took only military and intelligence objectives into consideration, with no civilian sites among its targets. Operation True Promise 2 was a testimony to Iran's full support of the resistance movement, above all Hezbollah. It was a message to the Israeli regime that the country would not sit back idly when its main ally in the resistance axis comes under attacks. A reminder to the occupation regime that overstepping Iran's red lines would never go unpunished. After all, the relations between Iran and Hezbollah date back to decades ago, and Tehran is committed to safeguard it for the ultimate sake of security in the region, come hell or high water. In Iran, 5 days of mourning have been declared to mark the assassination of Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah by the Israeli regime. Tehran has once again reiterated its staunch support for Hezbollah, a key actor in the resistance axis. Mohammad Khajoui, an Iranian journalist and expert on West Asia affairs.
Hezbollah is a strategic ally of Iran, and naturally, Iran cannot remain indifferent to the recent events affecting this resistance organization in Lebanon. One of Iran's priorities will be to assist Hezbollah in reviving its structure and addressing the issues that have led to such conditions for the group. I believe that Iran will continue its policy of support for Hezbollah in Lebanon and will spare no effort in this regard, whether the actions are political or military.
The loss of Hassan Nasrallah could create challenges for Hezbollah, but the core strength of the organization remains intact. Rather than destabilizing the group, Nasrallah's assassination has instilled a deep sense of commitment among its members, ensuring that Hezbollah will continue to pursue its objectives with unwavering resolve. Mohammad Qadiri, an Iranian journalist and expert on international affairs.
Sayyid Abbas Mousavi, the former Secretary General of Hezbollah, was also assassinated by the Israeli regime. Many believed that his assassination would undermine Hezbollah. The Zionists were very pleased about it. However, in the end, the world witnessed how his young successor was able to elevate Hezbollah to its highest level of capability and deliver severe strikes to the Zionist regime.
This formidable organization, known for its fierce resistance against Israel, has repeatedly declared its intention to maintain its fight. With thousands of dedicated fighters, many of whom seasoned veterans from the complex battles in Syria, Hezbollah is now more motivated than ever to seek justice for its cause. Their arsenal remains robust, featuring a significant number of long-range precision-guided missiles capable of striking key Israeli cities, including Tel Aviv.
Another aspect of the story is that the resistance groups in the region enjoy a high and exemplary level of cohesion. Following the recent assassinations in Lebanon, more than 40,000 members of the resistance front have declared their readiness to voluntarily go to Lebanon to confront Israeli attacks. Under such circumstances, Iran should once again show Israel that its strategic patience is not a sign of weakness, and the Islamic Republic can carry out retaliatory operations against Israel whenever it chooses.
Against such a backdrop, experts believe Iran will not abandon Hezbollah, even if it does not directly intervene in war between the group and Israel as it did in 2006. Back then, Tehran did not directly engage with the regime when a devastating war with Hezbollah was unfolding. However, after that war, the Iranians helped to rebuild and rearm this group.
Naturally, as the head of the resistance axis, Iran must be able to manage the upcoming conditions, restore cohesion to the resistance axis, and organize the situation for the future. In my opinion, Iran does not wish to enter into an all-out war with Israel and prefers to utilize a step-by-step approach to contain the occupation regime. However, it may undertake military actions against Israel on a case-by-case basis to remind them of its deterrent power.
Hezbollah was founded in 1982 during the Lebanese Civil War in response to the Israeli invasion of Lebanon. The group was initially composed of various Shia factions inspired by the Iranian Revolution of 1979, which put an end to the reign of the Western-backed Shah of Iran, who had amicable relations with Israel. The Islamic Revolution's justice-based ideals and its anti-Western sentiment resonated with Lebanese Shias, leading to a burgeoning connection between Hezbollah and Iran. Iranian support provided Hezbollah with ideological backing, military training, and financial resources crucial for its establishment and growth against the Israeli occupation regime. Mohammad Ali Hassania, an Iranian-based expert on Lebanon.
All officials of the Islamic Republic have declared that they will fully support Hezbollah. This is not solely due to ideological and belief-related issues. There are also geopolitical reasons. As we know, Hezbollah is at the forefront of the fight against the Zionist regime. If Hezbollah is defeated, Israel will expand its attacks and invade other countries. The wars Israel waged against Syria and Egypt and its attempts to occupy their lands in past decades illustrate this. Supporting Hezbollah from this perspective means countering Israel's excessive ambitions. Tehran is well aware of this issue and will make the best decision regarding it.
Throughout the 1980s and 1990s, Iran continued to bolster Hezbollah through direct military support, including training and arms supplies, facilitated by the Iranian Revolution Guard Corps. Iran's support intensified during Hezbollah's resistance to Israeli occupation in South Lebanon, particularly from 1982 until Israel's withdrawal in 2000. This period solidified Hezbollah's reputation as a resistance movement, with Iran positioning itself as a key supporter of the group. The relationship was further solidified during and after the 2006 Lebanon War, where Hezbollah successfully confronted Israeli forces, obtaining a moral and strategic victory and shattering Israel's invincibility myth for the first time. The war not only cemented Hezbollah's status within Lebanon, but also strengthened its ties to Iran, which celebrated Hezbollah as a symbol of resistance against Israel and Western hegemony in the region. The alliance between Iran and Hezbollah took on a new dimension as the war broke out in Syria in 2011. Back then, martyr Nasrallah opposed Western-backed moves aimed at destabilizing President Bashar al-Assad's government through mercenaries and terrorists. Hezbollah fighters became actively involved in Syria, aligning with government forces to combat U.S.-backed extremist groups and to prevent the spread of extremism in the region. Iran's financial and military support for Hezbollah also saw significant increases during this period, reinforcing their partnership.
It is no secret that Iran supports Hezbollah and assists this resistance group in Lebanon. However, the claim that Hezbollah is an Iranian proxy force in the region is baseless. Hezbollah is a very large organization that enjoys complete independence and has its own specific programs all aimed at defending the security of Lebanon and strengthening the axis of resistance. Coordination among various groups within the axis of resistance does not imply a lack of their independence, and Iran's assistance to Hezbollah does not mean that Hezbollah is an Iranian proxy force. Iran has always stated that it supports all resistance groups in the region to counter Western hegemony. The presence of Hezbollah forces in Syria and Iraq to fight Daesh and Hezbollah's engagement with Israel to support the Palestinian cause are all of Hezbollah's own volition, not by Iran's orders, which affirms the independence of this group.
Despite all challenges, Hezbollah and Iran have remained committed to their alliance, largely due to shared ideological goals and mutual interests in resisting Western influence and combating the genocidal regime of Israel. We have a lot more to cover today, but first let's just take a moment to catch up on the latest headlines.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
Hello everyone, welcome to the news section of this program. Here we'll go over some important news headlines. Meh News. Iran to stand by Hezbollah until Palestine liberation. Brigadier General Ismail Ghani, the IRGC Quds Force commander, offered condolences on the martyrdom of the former Secretary General of Lebanese Hezbollah Resistance Movement during a visit to Hezbollah office in Tehran on Sunday. In remarks during the visit, the IRGC Quds Force commander hailed the leadership of Hassan Nasrallah over Hezbollah, which lasted more than the past three decades, saying that Nasrallah enhanced Hezbollah position to its apex. He noted that Nasrallah at the helm of Hezbollah made great achievement in fighting ISIL terrorism and the battle against the Zionist enemy in 2006. General Ghani also declared that Iran will stand by Hezbollah in the continuation of Nasrallah's path and school until the conquest of Palestine and the liberation of the Holy Quds. Anadolu Agency. Iran says its response to Israeli crimes will come at right time. The Iranian response to the crimes of the Israeli regime will come at the right time and according to Iran's choice and will be determined at the highest levels. Mohammad Javad Zarif said in statements during a memorial held for Hezbollah Secretary General Hassan Nasrallah. Separately, Iranian Parliament Speaker Mohammad Baqir Ghalibaf conveyed a message of support for Lebanon during a phone call with his Lebanese counterpart Nabih Berri. According to the Tasnim News Agency, Ghalibaf offered his condolences to Berri regarding Nasrallah's death. We are witnessing an increase in the problems faced by the Lebanese people and war refugees these days. As always, we stand by Lebanon, Ghalibaf emphasized. Berri, for his part, reiterated that the fight against Israel would continue. Irna, Araghchi, blood of Nasrallah promises victory of truth over falsehood. Araghchi made the comment in a post he shared on his X account in Arabic language on Sunday, a day after Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement confirmed the martyrdom of its Secretary General Hassan Nasrallah in an Israeli airstrike in Beirut on Friday. The Iranian foreign minister in his post hailed Nasrallah for being the commander of the first Arab force to defeat the Zionist regime and retake occupied Lebanese territory from the Zionist enemy. Araghchi also praised the assassinated Hezbollah leader for the great victory he brought during the 2006 July war with Israel, saying that he now has the honor of being martyred and the path to liberate Al-Quds. The blood of Nasrallah will certainly be the sign of the victory of truth over falsehood, the top Iranian diplomat added. And thank you for joining us in this section. Please do stay tuned for the main narrative.
The assassination of Hezbollah Secretary General sent shockwaves throughout the region. The big question was, what would be the reaction of Iran, the leader of the resistance axis, to this heinous crime? had Israel overstepped Tehran's red lines? And would the recent assassination act as the last straw? The answer to all these questions was yes.
As of now, multiple messages have been issued by Iranian officials condemning this terrorist operation. Iran considers itself committed to guaranteeing regional security, the security of the Islamic Ummah, and the security of the resistance front. However, the important point is that the fundamental solution to confront Israel lies in the complete unity of the Islamic Ummah. The deafening silence of some Arab leaders, and worse, the collaboration of some with Israel, is a betrayal of the Islamic world. Iran will make every effort to defend the Islamic world, hoping that others will join this resistance against the crimes of the Zionists. The right side of history is clear.
Iran's initial reactions were measured, reflecting a careful consideration of its available options. The leader of the Islamic Revolution emphasized solidarity with Hezbollah without explicitly calling for immediate retaliation. But that turned out to be a lull before the storm.
There is no guarantee that if Iran does not engage in military confrontation with Israel, Israel will not take action against Iran. The reality is that whatever option Iran chooses will not be without risk. The conditions for selecting an optimal option do not exist, and every option will carry its own costs. Iran is certainly not seeking adventure in the region. Iranian officials bear the responsibility for the security of a country with a population of over 80 million, and undoubtedly any decision ultimately made will be to ensure this security in the country and the region. On the other hand, Israel has suffered irreparable blows in recent structure, and its historical behaviors confirm this claim. Therefore, any decision regarding Israel's abnormal behaviors must be taken with careful consideration, and Iran has always acted accordingly in this regard.
Shortly after the Israeli attack, the Iranian parliament convened a closed session to discuss the assassination of the Hezbollah leader in Beirut. During this meeting, lawmakers proposed various approaches to seek revenge and address the actions of the Zionist regime. Iran is determined not to play into the game orchestrated by Israel. Iranian officials have consistently asserted that they will not take actions to appease Netanyahu or the Israeli regime. Even in April, following the airstrike on the Iranian embassy in Damascus that resulted in the deaths of several senior commanders of the Islamic Revolution Guard Corps, Iran's response was limited to launching missiles and drones, despite the fact that a more severe retaliation was within their capacity. This measured response was intended as a warning from Tehran. Since then, Israel progressively escalated its actions, inflicting blows to Iran. While Iran was attempting to avoid further confrontation with Israel, this cautious approach, sometimes referred to as strategic patience domestically, had allowed Israel to take more aggressive actions against Iran and its allies in recent months. So enough was enough, and a military action seemed inevitable. The Israeli regime has consistently sought to frame the ongoing conflict as a war between Iran and Israel, depicting Hezbollah and other resistance groups as proxies acting on Iran's behalf against Israel. In contrast, Iran strives to portray the ongoing conflict as it really is, a struggle between Israel and Palestine. Consequently, despite Israel's efforts to drag Iran into the conflict, Iran remains committed to ensuring that the Palestinian issue is not overshadowed by other concerns. It also seeks to prevent the war from expanding into other regions, as such distractions could divert global attention from the Palestinian cause, which it views as the foremost issue. But this doesn't mean that Iran will not take military action, by no means. An Operation True Promise 2 was carried out to hammer home this message as well. To show the real power of the resistance and to cherish the Palestinian cause, military action against the occupation regime must be an option, always on the table.
In recent hours, numerous fake news and reports have circulated claiming that the resistance front has been dismantled and can no longer confront Israel. These reports have no relation to reality. In the coming hours, days, and weeks, the region should expect many events. Whether we will witness an all-out war or not remains to be seen, but whatever happens, the resistance front will rehabilitate its reputation, and the Zionist regime will not achieve its goals. The falsehood of these reports, which are part of the enemy's psychological warfare, will be exposed.
Israel seems happy after violating all international laws and human rights, but that wouldn't help the regime a lot. Its days are already numbered as it's faced with unprecedented challenges from within and without. The regime can't get away with murder all the time, can it?
Mohammad Javad Jamali, a former member of the Iranian Parliament's National Security Committee.
When you resort to assassination, it means you cannot carry out proper military action, indicating that you are no longer the superior military power and must resort to desperate measures. Before the victory of the Islamic Revolution and before the establishment of Hezbollah, Israel always conducted classic military attacks, but now it has turned to widespread assassinations. The situation for the Israeli regime is very unfavorable. The regime has lost its credibility in the world, and now there are widespread protests against Israel across the globe. This means that the situation has turned against the Israelis. In the past, supporting Israel had no cost, but now the circumstances have changed. Unconditional support for Israel comes with a price and brings public pressure. Whatever the case may be, the situation will progress in a way that Israel will regret its crimes and its recent assassinations.
Hezbollah is not merely an organization. It embodies a powerful idea and a resilient ideology rooted in the service of the Lebanese nation. This movement has always prioritized a security policy dedicated to countering the Israeli occupation and defending the legitimate rights of the Palestinians. Time and again, the Israelis have attempted to undermine this formidable Lebanese movement by targeting its leaders for assassination. Yet, despite these efforts, Hezbollah has transformed into an unquenchable flame, one that cannot be snuffed out by bombs or missiles. While the regime may strike at will and inflict blows on the resistance fighters, history has proven that Hezbollah is indefatigable. It has risen from the ashes before, and it will do so again. That's what true resistance looks like. Killing leaders does not extinguish movements. The spirit of Hezbollah is alive and thriving, fueled by the unwavering commitment to justice and liberation.
Israel dar yek vaziyet doshvari qarar girefte.
Israel is in a difficult situation. Political crisis and consecutive elections on one hand, an unstable economy following Operation Al-Aqsa flood, the displacement of hundreds of thousands of Israelis over the past year, widespread protests against Netanyahu, and the instability of his position as Prime Minister of Israel have made it impossible for this regime to make long-term strategic decisions. Consequently, it resorts to actions such as assassination and airstrikes to pretend victory. However, we all know that these actions will not yield the desired results for Israel.
Although this edition of Iran Today was produced before Iran's Operation True Promise 2, and the experts interviewed in this show didn't know that the operation was underway, they all asserted that the Islamic Republic is in full control of the situation and will take the best decision, be it a military or non-military option. While time will tell if Tehran has made the best decision or not, one thing is clear. Israel needs to think twice before taking any further action against Iran or its allies. Otherwise, the price the regime has to pay would be much higher.
That's all for today. Thank you from the whole team. Please do join us again same times next week to see what else is on. Till next time, take care.
Thank you. your option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. In the limelight.
The Zionist regime blatantly and systematically violates international law and has been censured numerous times in numerous international resolutions over decades of conflict. It is time to enforce these resolutions, including by invoking Chapter 6 of the UN Charter. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, "The mooted appearance by Zionist Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu at the 79th annual meeting of the United Nations General Assembly is a serious test of the world body's fidelity to its original mission of pursuing global security and peace. How can the UN convince the world and its peoples of its sincerity when it receives a war criminal who has enacted a genocide against unarmed civilians, women and children for nearly a year? The General Assembly is one of the world's most important international forums. It embodies the principle of equality, allowing every country equal weight, regardless of size or power. All countries have the right to speak, participate and vote, from the very big and powerful to the very small. The meeting also attempts to nudge the international compass toward the UN's five underlying goals of maintaining international peace and security, protecting human rights, delivering humanitarian aid, supporting sustainable development and climate action, and upholding international law. All of these goals require preventing a war criminal like Netanyahu from appearing before such an assembly." Since its founding in 1945, the General Assembly has always pursued, but only sometimes achieved, its main aim of international peace and security. The international scene is complex, and achieving these goals has never been an easy matter. The UN, as an institution that expresses international consensus, has not always been the most important factor in any success or failure. This is for many reasons, not the least of which is that the institution does not have the tools to impose its decisions except in exceptional cases. Moreover, largely organized by the victorious powers after the Second World War, the UN has been designed in a way to serve these powers and their interests, or at least not serve as an obstacle to those interests. Since October 7, the international community has faced a serious test of its ability to impose the international will to stop the genocide in the Gaza Strip, pursue war criminals, prevent regional conflagration, and even go beyond that to implement UN resolutions related to Palestinian rights. inherent rights such as the right to self-determination, return, and even the right as people under occupation to resist in all its forms, including armed resistance, are not or should not be controversial. But as the first anniversary of Al-Aqsa flood approaches and the implementation of the genocidal campaign against Palestinian people in the Gaza Strip continues, it can be said with certainty that the biggest victims of this fascist aggression after the Palestinian people are the United Nations, international law, and international humanitarian law. Indeed, having failed so signally to bring security and peace to Gaza over the past 11 months, or indeed to uphold Palestinian rights for the past 76 years, how can representatives of international institutions even begin to lecture countries around the world about the importance of adhering to international law? UN bodies have met repeatedly since October 7. Each time, majorities have supported an immediate end to the Zionist regime's aggression. The unfettered delivery of humanitarian aid, the right of the Palestinian people to self-determination in a state of their own. Each time, the international community failed miserably to impose its will, with the U.S., the main factor, using its veto power four times in the Security Council and dominating ceasefire negotiations. Perhaps worse, the U.S. allowed two Security Council resolutions to pass in March and June. The Zionist regime roundly ignored both, and neither led to any forceful implementation by any party. Such failure will only be compounded if the United Nations decides to welcome Netanyahu to pontificate about law, peace, and coexistence from the lectern at the General Assembly. Netanyahu stands accused of the worst war crimes at the International Court of Justice, while the International Criminal Court is seeking to pursue him with arrest warrants. These are UN institutions, and therefore the institutional expression of the legal will. What will remain of the United Nations' legitimacy and moral standing should it receive a war criminal who is up to his neck in the blood of women and children? How will the Secretary General of the United Nations, Antonio Guterres, who otherwise holds clear positions regarding Gaza and Palestinian rights generally, face the people who look to him and his institution to implement international law and punish this fascist entity and its racist leadership? The participation of war criminal Netanyahu in the United Nations is a disgrace that must be prevented immediately. It would do irreparable harm to what remains of the global rules-based order. It will usher in an era of international relations, answering only to the law of the jungle. Imagine Netanyahu in the handcuffs as soon as he sets foot on the grounds of the United Nations General Assembly. Imagine him appearing at the ICC in The Hague. That would serve as a lesson for every war criminal who believes that he can escape punishment, that no matter how long it takes, and regardless of who supports you, there is no such thing as immunity or impunity. The criminal record of the racist entity Netanyahu leads should be and has always been a central topic in the speeches of state leaders at the United Nations. The bombing of hospitals and schools, the imposed famine on children, the killing of journalists, the mass killings of civilians, the abuse of prisoners, the desecration of Islamic and Christian holy sites, and the theft of Palestinian lands through annexation and settlement in the West Bank are all crimes. The Zionist regime blatantly and systematically violates international law and has always been censured numerous times in numerous international resolutions over the decades of conflict. It is time to enforce these resolutions, including by invoking Chapter 6 of the UN Charter. No one should be above the law. If they are, force and constant unrest will be the law. That way lies only chaos and destruction, not only in Palestine, but everywhere. And everyone will pay the price.